my family, my daughter, person sitting next to me. Mm-hmm. I try to be conscious of it.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
If you spend your life trying to be more or other than what you are, because you don't think that what you are is enough, and so you constantly inflate yourself and impress yourself as much as others, mm-hmm. and fabulate and invent things, what would happen the day you actually see yourself within a more realistic framework? Have you ever had a chance to look at yourself in reality, or it's always in idealization?
There's moments, whether via therapy or in conversations or arguments or fights, where she will bring up, frankly, really horrible things I've done and said. And I'm like, damn, like, I would not want...
to be with me.
Yeah. Or I wouldn't want to be that person. I don't want to be that person.
Do you look down on her for being so kind? It's a strange question.
I have.
You have. You think if she was really more confident,
yeah.
powerful, she would already long have sent you to the wolves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know that?
I did send him to the wolves for about
Thank
5 minutes.
Thank you for
minutes.
Being so honest.
Yeah, absolutely. That was hard.
That's hard. Yeah. That's so
you understand?
Hard.
It's like, you know, you like the fact that she's kind, but in fact you look down upon the fact that she's kind because you think if she was really strong, powerful, and confident, she would already have said, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
If you live with a sense of self-loathing and that you don't feel worthy, the people who like you must be fools or dumb or blind. Because if they really were smart and insightful and strong and confident, they would see what you see. And what you see is not particularly likable. That is the distortion that comes with the self-loathing. And so when I say, would you respect her more if she had said enough is enough and she put a limit to this, I know that it's a mixed statement for him. Part of him probably appreciates deeply her kindness, and part of him looks down upon her kindness. And you have your answer to your question.
I do.
I mean, you won't, at the end of today, leave here in a state of faith and trust. It would be delusional.
I know. I know. I didn't have hopes that that would all be in place.
I would rather he tell you I lie compulsively because it gives me access to the person that I want to be and that I never felt I could be. But of course, as a result, I've never been able to become. That is probably the best you can have him tell you, is that he knows what he does and that he would like not to do it, but this is not going to disappear just overnight or with a promise.
I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I care about you so much, though. I want to believe that...
No, but you know, if you want to believe, then you become like him. Because he also goes around continuously wanting to believe.
You're right.
That's part of why he fabulates the whole time.
No other woman's ever held me accountable. Ex-wife. Relationships in the past. My mother.
Say more.
No one's ever called me out on my lies and deception. My marriage, like, I could do anything. And I did. And past relationships, yeah, just, you know, using silver tongue to kind of get out of stuff or telling a lie so intricately woven that I would begin to believe it. Even with her, I've made elaborate tales that most people wouldn't do to cover up a lie and then telling another lie to cover that up. It just becomes a Sisyphean ball of lies that's coming back and we have to keep pushing it up. And I don't want to do that anymore. It's exhausting. But no one's ever held me accountable. You know, I used to flirt with other women and do things like that, but in front of everyone, in front of all my friends, and just, you know, no one ever held me accountable for it. I mean, only a few people in my life have ever called me a cheater. Her being one, therapist being another, and that's it. So I've never been held accountable. I've always been able to get away with it.
You know, it's interesting because I'm listening to you and I'm thinking of it from a different angle. I can hear very well when you say nobody has held me accountable. But another way of looking at it is that maybe nobody even bothers telling you because they don't even expect anything.
Yeah, I can see that.
Why is this different?
Well, an initial reaction is it pisses me off that someone has caught on. she can see, like, deep inside my psyche. Like, more so that any, she knows me better than I know myself.
Well, she grew up with one like you.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Takes one to know one.
Yeah.
There's so many things happening in a very short amount of time here. You know, part of me says to him, you know, when people don't hold you accountable, you may think that it's because you got away with it, but sometimes it's because they don't even respect you enough to even expect more from you. He has asked, why do people let me cheat in front of them while I'm married? And why does nobody say anything? And it's not because you're so amazing. It's sometimes because you're so low anyway that why should we even bother asking from you? And then she says, why is this different? And the question is also a way sometimes of asking, what is so special about me? How am I different than all these other people? And he begins by saying, it's because you call me out on this, because you recognize me. And I say, yes, she does recognize a cheater. She grew up with one. She actually has known you before she ever met you. You are a part of her history too. You're not just a part of your own history.
No one has ever seen me for who I am, per se. No one's been able to dig through those onion skins to get down to my core being of a shitty guy. And I realize that more and more and more these days, that I've not been a good person. The other day I was thinking, there are more people on this earth who dislike me than like me because of things I've done. And that made me feel horrible. I mean, it stopped me in my tracks. I didn't feel guilt about what I did in the past, but that's creeping in more and more and more in my life these days.
Guilt or shame?
Both. Both. I'm ashamed of what I've done. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone, what I've done to her and others.
And what would exist instead? If you don't lie, you have to deal with reality.
Yeah. What would exist? I don't know. A reality that I feel that I have to accept who I am and accept my limitation, accept my flaws.
What? What would you need to accept?
That I've been a liar, a cheater. I have incredibly low self-esteem.
What does that mean?
It means I don't really like myself.
Because what? What does that mean?
Well, when I was younger, it was more for physical reasons. Like, I'm not tall and, you know, I was never the best athlete. And I would, you know, get poked fun at for things like that. And
were
now...
Were you bullied?
I'm sorry?
Were you bullied?
Yeah. Yeah.
A little or a lot?
A little. Even through college, I was bullied. You know.
And how did you square it? I'll show you. I'll be back. You think you have one up on me? Then do you know?
I didn't bully. I didn't fight back. I just let him say it and let it seep in and keep me up at night.
It's easy to see the bad guy. It's more difficult to see the wounded boy. And when he says he was bullied a little, but then he tells me in the next sentence that it went all the way through college, I know that what that little is not nearly as little as he would like it to think. And I can just see how he condensed years and years of suffering into this little sentence that is meant to just go unnoticed, but that holds within it decades of pain and humiliation.
So I guess in a sense that I was like, all right, if I can't be a big guy physically, I'm going to try to be a big guy other ways.
Right.
And then inflate.
Yes, 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 yes. If I can't be big in size, I'll be big in lies and stories, and I'll inflate myself. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I never put those together until just now, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I hurt with words.
But is my this is an interesting competition between us and the yeah. What you call this in English?
Jackhammer.
Yeah, the jackhammer. Yeah. But what happens when you hear things like that from people who don't care about hurting you is that sometimes you stop caring about hurting others. And that's what allows you to say the kind of stuff that you said.
I'm being tough, and I'm able to hurt people with words in ways that I would never do physically. Yeah. I mean, I use those words as weapons, for sure. You know, when I told her when she was pregnant the second time, to have some other guy raise the kid, not me. I can see now how that would just stab her. But at the time, no, I was fired up. I was fueled. I was drunk and I was like angry. And I.
You were angry a lot.
Yeah.
You were scared then.
And I was scared.
Of what?
Losing my kid.
The reason he's scared is that he was afraid to lose his daughter from his first marriage and that there would be a change in the custody arrangement if he was to have another child with this woman. He basically demanded that she have an abortion, and she got pregnant again. And so as a result, not one, but two abortions. It becomes clear that there are two primary people in his life, this woman and his daughter from his previous marriage. I mean, I listen to you and all I'm thinking is how lonely you must be.
I'm pretty lonely, you know, and I have her and I have my kid. Yeah, it's pretty lonely.
What's it like for you to listen to all this?
I feel a lot of compassion.
Have you heard all of it?
Most of it, but it's nice to hear him be really super open and vulnerable. I feel a lot of compassion for him. I'm terrified still.
That
is it always going to be like this? Like, is this something that can be repaired? This behavior. What does that say about me that I've allowed it to happen? But mostly I feel compassion, because this can't be easy. I know you're lonely. You're a good friend to me.
Yeah. I mean, you're my best friend.
But you see, I hear you say, I've struggled my whole life to make myself bigger. And since I couldn't do it physically, I did it in many other ways. But I have a feeling that you've struggled your whole life in wanting to feel special. And in wanting to feel that somebody really noticed you. And so when he speaks this way, it awakens in you like he's true with me. I get to see the side of him that nobody else does. With me, he will change. I'm going to be the one that's going to give him the redemptive experience.
I'm not fully convinced of that.
No?
No.
Okay.
I'd like to be the person. I'd like to help in some way. I feel like I do hold a mirror. Is it delusional to think that we do have something special and that could be a catalyst for change in both of us?
That's the big question, right?
Yeah. Aren't I helping him to see things for what they really are?
While it may appear at first that she's weak and unsure, there is also a real defiance in her that basically says, I know better than all of you what I'm doing because I am on a mission that none of you know about. And that mission had something deep to do with her own father, the story that she grew up in, and a promise that she had made to herself a long time ago that was now being played out with this man, of which he may not even know.
You both tell me I have a propensity for chronic lying. And then you tell me I want to trust. Something doesn't click. The first thing has to probably be I would like to know that he's not lying, and then maybe over time I'll learn to trust. But what you're wanting with what he's doing, it's a strange thing.
Meaning it's not.
It means that it's realistic that you don't trust him. On what basis would you trust him?
Right. I agree.
It makes sense what you're doing. Why would you trust him? And why would you tell him, the person who is basically in his more honest than ever, maybe telling you how much he's not to be trusted? Don't do it. You may have to take the risk. And as you take the risk, over time, he may prove to you that it was a risk worth taking. But you want the end at the beginning.
Yeah.
You want to start with the trust, whereas you may end up with the trust. With him, you can't start with the trust and not with anything that has happened between the two of you. That's the piece that is kind of fantasy thinking. And you know it.
I do know
it. You know it. You are smart. You're both smart people. You know, that's your version of telling yourself stories. He tells himself stories, but you have a version of that.
You know, we're intimate and we travel together and we do all this stuff in secret. So that was a secret as well. I mean, we're still a secret. You know, her friends and family don't know about us at all now.
No one knows we're here. No one knows we hang out.
Because I think you're ashamed.
True.
I lost so many friends over the course of our initial relationship when we were public about it. And they were, I confided in a lot of my close friends over during the painful parts of that. Mm-hmm. And after a while, some of them were so tired of me sticking it out and not leaving that they left my life. I've since been able to rebuild friendships with most of those people.
Because they think you came back to your senses.
Yeah. But here I am.
Mm-hmm.
I can just hear my mom. I can see her. She'd be so worried.
And she says what?
I think
it took me so many years to finally leave your philandering father. I see what you don't
see.
She'd
blame herself.
She'd blame herself. That she rendered you blind?
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like she's a little bit ashamed of me, but also proud of me. Similar to my marriage, she held everything together for us. She was the one that was at every dance recital and at every concert. And my dad kind of came in and out of the picture more. His job was pretty demanding. He was off doing other things.
Such as?
Who knows? Having affairs.
You know that.
I do.
Plural. Yes.
My first memory of that was when I was in kindergarten. And that played out in front of me and my brother. My mom took us to spy on him and his lady friend. They were running at the track together. And then I know he had an affair with one of his students at the school where he worked, and it ended up, I didn't know this until years later, but we had to move very suddenly across the state right before I started high school. And it was because of that that he lost his job or was asked to leave. And I know he had others when I was in high school and beyond, and something was the catalyst for my mom finally having enough when I was about 20. I was in college.
All of this remains in secret.
I think he knows that we know, but we've never had a very frank conversation about it. When I told my dad that I told him in two parts. I was leaving the marriage. I left that alone for a little while. And they seemed understanding about that. He seemed understanding. And then I told him that I had met someone else, and that was a big part of it. And he didn't speak to me for months. He was so mad. He was so mad at me. He was so mad and so ashamed. He told my entire family before I got a chance to tell anyone. And most of them don't talk to me now.
Which is so ironic.
Well.
But what did you do with him?
With my dad.
You just collapsed and got upset? Or did you...
I just told him it was a shame that I didn't get to tell them. I don't think I got nearly mad enough. I think I was... And I still am, like, riddled with shame and guilt for hurting my husband and my son. And
so when like your father shamed friends. you thought he's right, I deserve it.
I think I do.
Okay, now I understand. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with the discrepancy between how you saw yourself and how you acted? Because this is not just about a type of person. That has to do with circumstances of life, too. So many people, the majority of people, never thought this would happen to them.
Yeah.
But what's the story that you tell yourself?
That I was kind of just wandering aimlessly through my marriage. I was really missing intimacy. We didn't have any in my marriage.
I mean, but it was dead in my marriage too. And then we met, and it was just like...
Not right away.
To me, inside and in, you know, in terms of attraction...
We opened up, though, about our similar longings.
Yeah, we spoke about that, how unfulfilled we were intimately, emotionally. I don't know if I'd ever... I think I'd been in love maybe once in my life before. And I was deeply in love. I mean, I still am in love with her. I was willing to leave everything behind, my wife, life, time with my kid, but then I realized how important that was to me, and it really wore me down. You know, living with her and her son and not having my child really messed me up more than I realized at the time.
He threatened to go back home.
I threatened to go back home many times.
To whom? Why did you have to threaten her for that?
Because I missed my child so much.
And why did that have to come with a threat?
Because I couldn't have my kid.
Why did you need to threaten her?
I don't know. I know it was misdirected, and I just think a lot of the way I treated her in the past was because of that. Because of my inner sadness and rage of not having my child, for leaving a dead marriage, which would have been even more horrible for my kid to witness.
I understand your reasons, but it's a very, you know, it's one thing to tell her I miss my daughter. It's another thing to threaten her because of it.
I know.
Why do you kick the one and only person who's actually right near with you and really does not know how to put limits?
Yeah. Maybe that's why, because I know I can push it.
Poof.
Because I know I can get away with whatever, and she is... there.
See, to me, this is what you need to work on.
Yeah. Limits.
This is the essence of what goes on here. Not all the stories around. That's the decor. But these dynamics.
Limits.
It's limits for you, yes. It's like every time he kicks you, you come back with the question, how can I trust you? And I'm like, you're missing a few steps in between.
Why do I do that?
Why do you do that? Let's meet. I just met you. I don't know.
I know. Rhetorical question.
But you seem to be a rather introspective person who does a fair amount of thinking. You tell me. I am experiencing the anger that you're not experiencing. Something is off. Yeah. I am vicariously experiencing the feelings that you are denying. And I put the words to put limits. Or it's not just to be angry. It's also, there's a lot of things in this, but it does have something to do with not collapsing. It's like your father does a dirty trick on you and you collapse. And you hunch over rather than actually say, no. Of all people, you certainly do not have moral authority here. And don't confuse me with you. And put your shame on me because you think that the apple didn't fall far from the tree. What I'm trying to understand is it that you have an independent spirit and you say, I don't just go with the herd and I don't just blame and shame people because that's the convention, and I can distinguish between having a philandering father and a good father at the same time, which doesn't have to be contradictory. He may have been a shitty husband, but he may have been a good father. Is it that you think, I'm smarter than all the other women. They all will come and go and I'll be the one to stay. I'm the one constant. And I'm the one that he can't fool. And I'm the one who sees through him. And I'm, in some way, I'm the special one in that sense.
With my dad, you mean?
Yeah.
Same here.
Say more.
All right. That feels similar with you. My relationship with my dad in that sense feels similar to my relationship with you.
Say more.
I feel like I see right through you, but I have so much compassion for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know when I'm lying. You're like a human polygraph to me. Like
your eyes change.
You know exactly. Like no one has ever called me out of that. No one has ever known I was lying before.
No, listen. She's had a very good training.
Yeah.
She came well prepared.
Yeah. So she knows just the shift of my eyes, or if I like tilt my head a certain way, or like get my hands a little fidgety, like she'll know.
So what's it like to live with a human polygraph?
when I.
Great expression.
When I...
Has he called you like that before?
No, but that's what it feels like.
I felt like I had to be cautious. But now I actually really appreciate it.
Do you?
I do. Okay, so...
You see, you think you have extra powers through the lying. And you think you have extra powers through being an astute polygraph.
Yeah.
I do feel like...
You meant to meet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are actually in a competition with him. But in a competition as in, we'll see who does it best. But you pretend to come and ask me if you can trust him. Rather, that's kind of almost a fake question. Because you know the answer is no.
I know the answer.
Not now, for sure. Yeah. But that's not why you're with him. You're with him because you're going to show him, your dad, and many men, that there are polygraphs who will outdo all of them.
I don't want that.
I didn't say you want it. I'm saying that's the script you're in.
I know.
Is it?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, she... the way I see it, when she had caught me in something, she like got satisfaction out of it.
Yes.
Like she got, she...
Yes, you have the eyes rewarded. Of the caught puppy, yeah. And she has, yeah, the glee.
She's like, aha.
I don't know if glee is the right word.
What? You definitely seem satisfied.
No, I didn't mean joy. I meant, yeah, I meant you feel vindicated.
Yeah.
But it's painful.
Of course it's painful. And you can ask yourself, why do I want to put myself into that kind of a situation? I would ask myself that. I would bring that question to your therapist too. But I'm watching, because your demeanor doesn't tell the full story. And I'm looking for, what is she after? What is she doing? What's the hook for her? Besides that he's a charming, smart, fun to be with, all of it, I get that too.
Yeah, we have so much that
we... Yeah, but vis-a-vis your entire community, which you stand to lose so much, none of this has moved you. Because there's a part inside of you that says, I know better than all of you. And that has very little to do with him. That all pre-exists. My office is in the middle of New York City. And that means that I have to contend with sirens of the fire trucks, with jackhammers, and today is particularly bad.
But you did know these things about me when we got together. I told you the total truth about my past.
Not the total truth.
Well, a lot of the truth. A lot of the truth.
But until I experienced the lies and the, yeah, limbo of our relationship, it didn't...
Yeah.
I thought that we left our marriages for each other. I thought this was so different.
Yes.
And it was different. It is different in many ways.
I thought that I was immune, yeah, to those things. Yeah. That was dumb. I mean, you told me after a handful of months being together, we had a big fight about something, and you said you've never been able to feel empathy, you've always lied, and all my red flags went up, but I did nothing about them.
And here we are.
Because the grand illusion of love is that when you say that to someone, then they think this is all changing because of me.
Yeah. Mm.
That's what I meant by special.
I know.
Yeah. She thinks that her goal is to change me to being this empathetic, honest, devoted, compassionate man. And those things are in me. They are. But the pressure to change on a dime, it just makes me not have resentment per se, but makes me be like, hey, hold on. I can do this at my own speed.
No. I'm going to add a piece to this. Okay. May I?
Yeah, please.
You didn't... Because what you're saying is that you didn't become a chronic liar, or you didn't become even sociopathic for no reason. When she pushes you to change like that, there is a part of you that feels that she doesn't really have a compassion or an empathy for you.
Yeah. It makes me think that she's doing it for her own reasons.
And that you didn't become like that out of no reason. That, yeah, there was plenty of your own pain and your own suffering and your own boyhood,
yeah,
led to you becoming this way, and that this was the best protection and adaptive shield you could have.
Yeah.
You want to fuck with me, I'll fuck you.
Yeah.
And I won't even have any remorse about it. Yeah. And when you pressure him, it makes him feel that you don't understand the pain that lies underneath.
Yeah.
I don't think you mean that, but that's what I think he reacts to.
The entire time I was with the other man here for the last almost year, he was a bug in my ear. Leave him. I'm going to change. I'm going to do all the work. You're going to see it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Leave him. Mm-hmm. Be with me. I'm different. I'm going to change. I left. We broke up.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're like, when I'm ready, don't pressure me. Well, it's a big change of two.
Different circumstances. When you were with the other man,
yeah,
He was taller.
Yeah. He was a musician, he had a band, he had tons of friends.
Yeah. So he had a mission.
As we were winding down to the end of the session, and it became clear to me that I would have to punctuate the possibility for a future together, and if so, under what terms, I began to think that the noises of the city were speaking to us and conspiring to tell this couple that there was an interference that they couldn't overcome.
You people should be friends. You would be tremendous friends for each other.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you meant for couple. Sorry.
It's okay.
Not that I have the truth on any of this. Yeah. But now, what you can offer each other, you have a much better chance to make good use of it as friends than if you try to become a family, blended family with... Oh, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. Meaning you want each other in your lives? You feel that, what you call that tether thing, have each other in your life. You have a better chance to experience the beauty of all of that, that if you stay good friends with a real deep connection with each other than if you try to become a couple.
If they want to preserve the good stuff they have between them, they'd better be friends. That doesn't mean I'm right. But since they came asking me, do we have a chance? Can we be a couple? Do we have a future? And so forth. I felt that I needed to share my impression with them at the end, which is, you have some wonderful things with each other, cultivated as friends. Better chance to stay in each other's lives if you are friends than if you go for the next divorce.
Couple 3, The Other Woman.
Last summer we went away, just the two of us without the kids. If you compared the trip that we had 3 years before that, it doesn't even feel like the same couple, sexually.
As in better, as in...
No, way worse. And
this couple has been together for more than a decade. They are in the middle phase of their relationship. They have two young children. And they are in a transition where they are exploring consensual non-monogamy in response to the woman's growing sexual interest in women.
She came to me just about a year ago and said that she was having a strong attraction toward women. And I felt like it was a part of herself that I didn't want to deny her from exploring.
What starts out as a mutual agreement turns into a crisis when it becomes clear that she actually fell in love with one woman and that that is more important than her attraction to women.
I don't think either of us thought it was going to go this way.
I think there's some truth to that. I think when I came to him, I really believed, I thought it was just a sexual attraction.
Watching her fall in love with someone else was about the most painful thing that I've experienced. And I don't want to do that again.
What do I need to know for us to be able to do something important today?
I think physically or otherwise, I think he just generally became complacent overall. And I think that that's not what I want in life. And that's not who I am as person. And I think, if nothing else, that some of these life things have been a point of reflection of, like, I certainly don't want to be complacent anymore. And if our next project or our next step was a baby and it's not, then I need another thing. And I want, I think, someone to help me figure that out, what are the next pieces. And I'm not sure he's been attuned enough to know that that's what I was needing. And I probably haven't asked for it either.
He said that his family was muted and that feelings were often muffled. How would you describe your family?
Very different from that. We're louder in general. Mm-hmm. And always been of kind of the mindset that, like, you say it, you get it out there, you get, you know, that's how you work through it. You know, it doesn't matter if I yell or scream, you know, I still love you. It doesn't, you know, we're working through it. Ignoring it doesn't get you anywhere. At the same time, I think that there's a lot of rationalization that happens for me, or and like logical filtering of feelings that happens for me, because I'm also probably a keeper of the peace, the sense of trying to, like, wanting that as well. And I'm sure that probably had to do a lot with my family dynamics. When I was in high school, my mom was also went through some health issues. She also suffered from depression for most of her life and was not in a good mental or physical space kind of during my junior and senior year of high school. And
that's an understatement, right?
Yes.
What's the real statement?
She learned that drinking with certain medications was real fun and felt really good. And she lost her license when I got mine. And my brother's 7 years younger than me. So even in an early age, I was more...
in a parental role.
Yes, parental role.
And that sentence of, I have to do everything. I'm the one who has to think about everybody. I have to think about everyone else's needs. And who is there ever to think of me? This is an old tune, mm-hmm. right? A painful tune that you remember vividly. Mm-hmm. And every time you get pissed at him, or you get very sad with him, you start to experience a similar overburdening. Put this in your own words.
I think that oftentimes when things have gotten challenging and I feel that pull and that need to make sure that I'm keeping everything together, I am reminded of all those times that I had to try to just keep it together. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely a part of me that thinks that I'm supposed to be superwoman. I'm supposed to be able to.
And there's a part of you that's very angry at feeling that you have to be a superwoman. And there's a part of you who feels very bereft. And there's a part of you that feels very lonely at having. And what else?
And there is a part of me that does feel like I don't want to do all those things anymore.
Right. That's right. There's a part of you that's tired of being superwoman. And that whole dialogue, give me the dialogue in your head. That's a speech.
I don't want to keep doing the same old things. That's not working anymore. And it's exhausting. I want to feel like I'm enjoying life and not like having to burden myself with everybody else's shit. I don't even get to think about me. Like, I am someone who doesn't want to have to do that all the time, who can accept that there is no perfect and wants to just know what I want and have some sense of what that is, because I'm not even sure I know what it is anymore, because it's just so meshed with thinking about everything else.
Did you have a glimpse of that in your experience with the other woman?
Yes.
The first thing I thought is, this is not a sex story, and this is not about an orientation story. It is not even about a sexual identity or a sexual... It's not about that. The importance of the woman as the person that she fell in love with may be less about a physical, sexual attraction to women and more about the quality of her emotional and intimate connection with that woman, which then also became eroticized. So it was very significant that it was a woman, because being taken care of by a woman was what she longed for, and longed for as in, I want another wife, and also as in, it is the mother I never had. But it wasn't necessarily a sexual script.
I think I did get to have moments where I got to think about me and have someone that thought about me and didn't require planning and considering and knowing what they, you know, I got to feel a little bit free.
Do you think that was, well, I wonder how much of that was the circumstances and the, and what I mean by that is how that kind of existed in a bubble and how you didn't have responsibilities with that person. You didn't have children with that person. You didn't have the everyday shit to slog through. Your experiences with that person were for pure pleasure and were isolated and separate from all of that shit.
And I get that. And I think there's probably certainly some of that. I think some of it did feel like someone that did think about me and gave.
Because she didn't have anybody else to think about. Sorry if that was defensive, but.
I give all the time and I have tons of people to think about. Why should you have to be any different? Why is that an excuse?
It's not an excuse.
Well, you just gave that as an argument, that as if that that's, you know, but I give all the time. I 100% believe that, and I know and agree, it was a bubble. Life just muddles everything. That is hard, that's not a true representation of what can and cannot exist outside of a bubble.
Do you think that you ever experienced that feeling with me?
Yes and no.
The way I hear this question is that part of what we long for in romantic love is to be unique, indispensable, and irreplaceable to at least one person. And what I hear him ask her when he says, did you ever have those feelings for me, or have you ever loved me in the way that you have loved this woman, is the question of replaceability. It's not just that we can fall in love with someone else, but if you say this was such a unique experience, does it mean that we never had that? And it is one of the most poignant questions that are asked in these triangular situations.
I don't know if that's a valid answer, but...
Well, what feeling exactly?
Well, do you feel like you've never had that feeling of, like, me thinking about you or thinking about what you want or...
No, I don't think that you are dismissive of that, no.
I'm not saying... I didn't mean to say what I said as an excuse, and I don't think that, regardless of what the situation is, it's not... It's fucked up for you to not feel like you were getting that from me. I just sometimes feel like it's unfair to compare that feeling that you had with her to a marriage of 11 years.
And I get that. And I think that the spaces where I try hard not to make it a comparison because they're not the same things. But when I try to think about what that showed me, taught me, what I think I got from that, it's something that was for me and that was a feeling of wanting and missing some emotional connections that I don't think I have felt in a long time.
Ever?
I don't know.
The bubble is a sense of oneness that we feel in rapture. What she's talking about also is that sense of rapture and that sense of oneness where you have a kind of a dissolution of the self, where you are enveloped by someone else that makes you feel like the world stands still and you have a sense of timelessness and a sense of utter safety and transcendence. That happens in a bubble. He's trying to say to her, you can't have a bubble in marriage, but that's a given. And you're not meant necessarily to bring the bubble into the marriage, though some people do. So it's important that he get the full sense of what this meant. Actually, it's important for both of them that they actually understand it so that it doesn't become an indictment of their relationship.
Mister, she has not experienced with you, not because of you, but also because of how she has been with you, someone who takes care of her, where she's not in the parental role, which on some level she's at times with you too. And for the first time, someone comes along who seems to be powerful enough in the emotional sense of the word and gives her the feeling, with me, you don't have to do it all. I'll do it. I'll take care of you. You can relax. You can feel safe. You can feel free of the burden of having to think about others. That's the freedom. And, of course, because it's in a bubble and it's secluded from life, it feels like this is for me. But the power of the relationship was less about the autonomy and more about, I think, somebody who for the first time you felt you can let go in their arms and they'll keep you from falling. And when you have that experience for the first time, it's irresistible. And I don't think you've explained that to him.
No, I'm not sure I've been able to understand it myself.
Do you get it?
Yes.
Does this resonate?
Yes.
That feeling that you can let go in someone else's arms and for once they're the ones holding you up, that is life-changing. And it's hard to come back home from that. That's the comparison. Not marriage versus love story. But you don't trust him enough for that. You don't think you can rest on him and that he would be able to keep you up. That's a collusion. I have no idea if he knows even what he can do or not. And if you can let go on him. I always have the image of the game on the beach, you know, where you fall back and you make sure that... Can you do it?
I don't know.
Have you ever done it with him?
No.
Get up. Come on. Stand up. I'm serious. I talk, you fall back.
I'm not sure I can do this.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
All right. Do you need a wall or you can do that without a wall?
I think I can do it without a wall.
Move up a little bit forward. You can keep your eyes open.
I always look for ways to create the representation of what we're talking about. And silly games are often powerful representations. Emotions are embodied experiences. We can talk about them. But we can instantly sometimes glimpse them in the physical language. So while they were giggling, everything was being said. And that's okay to have some anxiety. It's a strange thing to do, you know, in front of the therapist like that. But all the truth was oozing out.
You will need to find a way to convey to her, I want you. Not, I can't without you. Or I'm here for you. Not only I need you. So, as she falls back, you can use any of those lines. Whichever is the real one to you. I'm holding.
I'm here for you. And I want you. I'm here for you.
The trust of the leaning on and the leaning in between two partners. And why is that letting go so crucial and so important in our understanding of sexuality? Because we don't let go with someone that we do not experience as powerful, as strong, as able to withstand us. If I think you're going to crumble under me, if I lean on you, then I don't let go on you. This understanding in the sexual realm is fundamental.
I was a little nervous at first. There was a little doubt, a little questioning whether or not I could do it. I was afraid, but I felt confident that I could do it. And every time that we did it and I caught you, it helped me build confidence that I could do it again, because I don't think that you give me that opportunity very often. I don't think that you do trust that I would catch you, but I just want you to give me the chance.
Mm-mm. It's not she doesn't give you the opportunity.